Okay, so as usual on a special day, on a Yom Tov and so on, we'd like to learn something about it. And the piece that we're going to learn is in Reb Shamshon Fol Hirsch's Sefer V'Magid Hashana. The original is in Hebrew. It's been translated, but again, I don't like the translation. I like the original Hebrew. There's something very special about Reb Shamshon Fol Hirsch as a person to write about that, about Hanukkah. I think Hanukkah was especially meaningful to him because probably in no country at no time were people as acculturated and as drawn to their host culture as Germany in the 1800s. His life spanned approximately 1800 to the mid 1880s, and his fight, his struggle, was not that much different than the struggle against the Misyavnim. Really was very similar in that way. This piece over here, I wanted to give two introductions so that we understand better what he's going to talk about, and it's going to be, it's going to explain to us the background. One is, if you see the psukim that I pasted on top over here, it's a psukim from the Haftorah, of Hanukkah, Shabbos Hanukkah. Now, the Haftorah of Shabbos Hanukkah is from the Vim, like always, but I don't think people realize Zecharia Navi was one of the three Nevi'im who spanned both Bayis Rishon and the coming back. He was the Nevi'im that went Ashkenaz Gdola. And the whole Nevuah over here is a Nevuah that actually touches on the problems and the issues of Bayis Sheni. Yoshua, the Kohen Gadol, he was the Kohen Gadol, his own children were married out. And the Nevuah talks about that. It had never happened before. This was a result of having been in Golis and coming back, and you know, Ezra has a huge section about they made a whole get-together to separate the people that had been married out, the spouses, and so on. Very, very difficult time in Klal Yisrael. And this the Haftorah actually deals with that. And that's part of the prophecy. Specifically, the point that he's talking about is a different point. And it's the pasuk I just skipped out one pasuk. He told him, Shmano Yoshua Kon Godol Atav Re'echa Yishon Fanecha. Listen, Yoshua, the Kon Godol, you and your friends, Ke'anshi Moifes Heima, you are people worthy of a miracle. Ki Hini Mevias Avdi Tzemach. I am going to bring Mashiach, who's called Tzemach. This pasuk and there's another one or two places in the parasha over here where he refers to Mashiach specifically as Tzemach, and this is going to be the theme that he's going to be speaking about and addressing. What name of Mashiach is Tzemach? We actually sort of allude to it in a very indirect way. Shmon Esra, we say as Tzemach David Avdecha. The word Tzemach doesn't mean a name over there. It means the growth of, the sprouting of. But still, there's sort of an echo of this name Tzemach. That's one piece, that's one point I wanted to present as an introduction. And it'll be relevant. He'll talk about it. The second one is, he will deal at length in it, but I just wanted to speak it out beforehand so that we know what we're talking about. The Hebrew language is a very, very straightforward language. It's something that is intuitive, and even though Americans who never learned Hebrew before think, oh, it's so difficult and so on, objectively, Hebrew is by far a much easier language than English. You know, I remember when my kids who came from Israel here were struggling to learn English, and they couldn't understand how spellings that didn't make any sense, why were they there, and I would just shrug my shoulders and say, what can I tell you? I don't know. In Hebrew, it's very intuitive, and everything makes a lot of sense and structured. There is an anomaly, and that is five letters that are at the end of words that take on a different shape, and they are five letters. There's kaf, mem, nun, pei, tzadi. They take on a different shape when at the end of a word. doesn't seem any rhyme or reason to it, and it doesn't seem to make any sense. Why these five, and what's it coming to hint at, and what's unique about it? Those are called, in the language of the Gemara, just as a sort of what's the right word for it, as an acronym, they're called Manzipach. Mem Nun Tzadik Pei Kaf. In the later works, and I think more Kabbalah works, refer to it Kimenapets, which is the that's in order. But we don't have any real sense of grammatically and logically what's there for. The Gemara says something strange. The Gemara says Manzipach Sofim Amru. It was given to us at a later date by the Nevi'im. To which the Gemara says that's impossible. We halacha doesn't work that way. And the Gemara says they brought it back to Klal Yisrael. It had become lost with time. They brought it back, like some other things. That's the technical halachic part of it. There's a medrash which he'll bring, and we'll see later, that the five letters Manzipach, all of them allude to the Geula. They all allude somehow to the redemption, and it brings Psukim to it, and that's going to be, these are two concepts that he's going to develop as he goes on, and I wanted to jump the gun, so to speak, and so that we have the information in the background. Okay. He starts by speaking about the concept of a nes. V'yomeinu mishameshes hamila nes letzi maisapela. When we ask a person, what is a nes means a miracle. Believe it or not, in Tanakh, that word does not appear, meaning a miracle. The words in Tanakh that mean a miracle are either mofes, os, mofes, pella. The word nes almost never appears. When it appears, it usually means a banner. It means a something which is sort of a banner that you hold up. Once or twice, which he'll mention, the word could go either way, but it's actually the word nesa nisim is not, it's used in the sense of a test. Lenasa says chem, you know, amenasa ani, and so on. That word is used that way. The word nus, if you do a computer check, you'll come up with a lot of nes, but it's nus, which means to run away. That you'll find a lot of, but not this. So he says, "V'ilu b'tanach mishtamas milazu kidegel hamisnoses berama." It's a banner, and he brings a pasuk ukenes al hagiva, like a banner on top of a mountaintop that rallies the troops. V'chitu mines sarav. So he says, and also the ode, "Kolzman shanes misnoses berashak dud yodim anshe atzava." In other words, whenever you have a banner, besides directing you where to go, much more important than that is there's somebody on top, somebody's leading the battle, he's still standing strong, and there's leadership, and you're going someplace. And he says, and therefore, lefiza ochin hulemis moed amila neis es anisim vaniflos shesach leYisrael. We don't look, in other words, when we speak of a miracle, of a nes, so we kind of think in a very shallow way that the idea is God proved himself. I wasn't sure if he could do kind of God things. Yes, he did a nes. It's against nature and so on. That's not the point of a nes, because it wouldn't be called a nes for that. A nes means it's a signpost. I'm here with you, and I'm with you, and I'm leading you. Much more important, whether God, our understanding of God is almost axiomatic. We don't keep proving it by the fact that he can do all sorts of miracles. If the first miracles didn't do it, then the rest is not going to do it. It means it's there at critical junctions in Klal Yisrael that I am there with you and guiding you. Hanisim, and he says the same way, Nisim are also called Mefsim. Beloshin Amenu, let's skip down two or three lines. Hey Mikroim Nisim, They are markers, mile markers on Klal Yisrael's journey. This happened here, this happened here, I was here with you, I was here with you, and so on. People see the Nes and they understand that there's somebody there that's keeping track of us and moving on with us. And all of Klal Yisrael's wandering and ups and downs, there is a hand guiding it. Okay, and then he brings the only place that you have the word Nes is Vayihu L'Nes by Korach, and over there he says it didn't say that God made a miracle. He said they became a sign. Over there, he finds that the word Nes starkly delineates the point he's making. It's not the miracle of disappearing down in the earth. It's rather this became a very clear indication that Moshe was right. Aaron is supposed to be the Kohen, and that anyone that argues with him is bad. Okay, that's his introduction as what Nes generally symbolizes. Next page. Chanukah, Nes Chanukah, who ha'achron b'shuras ha'nisim, she'osa shamlorim ozei senu la'am, kidei she'isham shalom smolim me'irim, le'horos anadeakos ha'golos. The last Nes is Chanukah. Any meaning as follows, there have been many Nisim, but they're not recognized by everyone equally and something that we can say, yes, here it is, universal in terms of Klal Yisrael, and this is what it is, and so on and so forth. Rather, it's a lot more, it's individual. People felt they've gone through Hashgacha Pratis, everyone sees miracles, but it's kind of subjective. The last national miracle where we say Sha'asol Nisim, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made us, everybody in Klal Yisrael rallies around this flag, the last time that happened was Chanukah. And he says, it was a very, very strange moment. It started with the Chashmonaim's coming, uplifting Klal Yisrael, and faded away with, unfortunately, the Chashmonaim faded away. They themselves became, in later generations, very acculturated. They disintegrated, and Klal Yisrael disintegrated with it. That was the unfortunate reality. So he says that this whole prophecy over here, he says, is a prophecy about what's going to happen to Klal Yisrael in Bayis Sheni. In other words, it is a prophecy about Chanukah. It speaks about a menorah over there. It says there's a menorah, and there's oil feeding it, and there's tzemach, all of these elements of a future geula that's being told at the beginning of Bayis Sheni. It's the rare example of nevuah sort of being present by a shayni. And he says, "Oid be may haliyah mi bavel, omar shom zubavel shukran gadol." As they were coming back to Israel, he was telling them it's going to be a very different setup than the first bias. Ki ofya shom medina zu lo yizbatei beutzmat tzvait ubatzmat medinit. This second Malchus of Klal Yisrael will not be expressed with military strength or with even real independence. They never were really independent. They always had some sort of semi-autonomous, semi-independent status. Klapichutz lo yitzapu lo kol hasegen yikarim. Don't look on the outside to find any great accomplishments. La'eis ato ein hi ala even pina lebinyan shukam arsayamim. It's a cornerstone for a building that will be built achris hayomim. Aval benigud l'chitusa medinis v'chomris. But in contrast to its low profile in terms of political, military, and international stature, hitizbalet b'lyonusa ruchnis. It will stick out in terms of a ruchnistic stature. It will only be in holding on to Torah that will have our victories. And he brings the pasuk, very famous pasuk, lo b'chayil, lo b'koch, and b'rucham shel tzvokos. It's not going to be with an army and not with power, but with my spirit, Hashem said. There's no mountain that stands before Zerubbabel. If you have the Ruach Hashem with you, everything will happen. And then he brings the pasuk of Mevevis Avdi Tzemach. So now he says, Tkufasenu Mishula Letzemach. This Tkufa, starting with Bayis Sheni, till the end of days, is like a plant. Matzemach Natur B'mekomo. Just like a plant in its place. Toch Tzmichu Dil Masadis, by constant growth, that is... how a plant progresses, so too our tkufa, it will be 2,000 years, you know, he was off from our tkufa 100 some odd years, it will keep growing, and that's what's happening now. And now he introduces the concept of mansepach. He's going to bring the chazal, and he will explain each phase of the gula. He says, the aleph beis is the most fundamental of Torah that we have. The Aleph Beis is building off the Torah. So that means that things that are locked into the Aleph Beis will stand with us forever. Heim kovu es chamesh es ha-sofis mansepach kesimani necham l'chon ha-kesgulz. They locked into the Aleph Beis, knowing that no matter what, at least the Aleph Beis, the Jew will know. In the Aleph Beis of Klal Yisrael, we have Simon of the Gula. He says, there will come a long time, millennia of years, and we will think it's gone, and we have in the core of our teachings, not even in the content, but in the very Aleph Beis, we have those signs. And now he brings this Gemara of Mansbach Tzof Mamrum that we mentioned before. And now he brings a medrash. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, this medrash is Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, which is one of the early medrashim. Chamesh osios nichpalu. V'kula shangula. There are five osios that are doubled over the Hebrew language, and all of them refer to a particular instance of geula. Kaf, shenigal avram me'ur kastim shenema lech lecha me'artzicha. The three last letters of that sentence is a kaf sofit, lech lecha me'artzicha. Mem bo nigal miyad av yitzchak avinu al pishon shnema lech me'imonu ki atzamto mimenu me'od. You find the mem repeated constantly in the sentence. That's the mem. Nun bo nigal Yaakov avinu al esav shnema tzileini no. Pei Bonigalo Yisrael Mitzrayim Shnema Pakod Pakadati. That Rashi brings that they had a sign, and the pay, the Pakod Pakadati is that. Tzadi, Bo Osir HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ligos Yisrael Vosef Malz Revias, Shnema Hine Ish Tzemach Shmo, Mitachtav Yitzmach Bonas Heich Hashem. So each one of these letters alludes to a certain gula. I want to pause a bit and talk about this a little bit, because I think it's important. Whenever you've come across a part of Torah that is remes, which means it's not what it says, but it hints at something, so it's never just a blind hint. You know, there are two types of remes. When you hint at something, it could be totally unrelated. If I write a letter to you and I say, I make up a code beforehand that when I write that my aunt came for a visit, it means that the torpedoes have been sent out. So not really, unless your aunt is torpedo-like, that doesn't really have anything one to do with the other. It just, we made up something and it means nothing. I can say blue and it'll mean this, and white mean this. A wise person writes in a way that you pick up from his writing, it sort of has double meaning, it has a lot of, we'll call them harmonics, it's sort of a lot of after meanings and things of that nature. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu picks things to hint at something, and you're talking about something so fundamental as locking it into the Aleph Beis, it's obviously going to carry meaning. And I want to discuss maybe one or two points about it. The first is, these are osios sophios. these are end letters. In other words, it's there's something special. We say to ourselves, there's something special to letters at the end, which already has sounds geula. In other words, it's the end of something. But it's more than that. They're double letters. In other words, there are events in Klal Yisrael that we see them for what they are, and we see them for what they'll be. The same tzaddik, the same pei, the same kaf, depending on whether it's in the process or the end of the process, takes on a very different form. It's telling me that the end of something, the same event, when we look at it through the eyeglasses of now, we need to judge it in one way. And when you look at it with the telescope of the future, of sort of where is it leading to, what's going to be, it'll be something else. And I think that's one point in understanding a little bit the remez of these double letters, that they have a double meaning depending on middle or end. So that's the picture of Rebbe. He will now discuss each one of these, something that was unique about the specific geula. Let me talk about this also. It's very narrow vision to look at each event in Jewish history in its own context only. In other words, this tzara happened, okay, this nace happened. This tzara happened, this nace happened. You know, how does the joke go? Like Jewish holidays, they tried to kill us, they didn't succeed, so let's eat. You know, it's not Hanukkah is one thing, Shavuos is another thing, Purim is another thing, and that's that. There's a development. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is moving things forward, and each Golus and each Geula puts into place another step in Klal Yisrael's redemption. And therefore, each one is going to be different. It will be different issues, and different points are being put into place. So he's going to go through each one of these geulas and point out how each one of these had a different facet of geula. So yes, these are all, they have an identical point that they're all geula, but each one is a different aspect of geula. Kaf, lech lecha. Avram hayabedet v'yechidi mul ulamay umlo. Avram was alone, one and alone in a whole world. He was the only one who stood up and said, you know, there's a God and the world is his and the world needs to do what God sees as right. Not one out of tens and tens of thousands of people. This geula is that it needs only one point of good to bring about an entire geula. The geula that's unique to Avram is the geula that one person can start the process to Achayamim. And once that gets put into place, and he'll reference to it at a later point, that's something that means for all generations to come, it requires one person only to move things the way they should be. And the truth is, we can look at history in different kufis, and you really can look at it and say one person brought about a whole movement. Say like Avraham Shalom himself, he came to Germany when basically almost all of Germany was reformed, and he had less than a million of mispalim, and he created a revolution that reestablished German Jewry as a Torah true and vibrant Jewry. The Baal Shem Tov created a whole new facet of Avodas Hashem that for many people was the only way to Avodas Hashem, and certainly gave a tremendous chizuk to everybody in Klal Yisrael. And on and on. People who established Torah in America, they were yechidim and yechide yechidim. And again, Avraham Avinu's geula established the fact that one nekuda is enough to bring a geula. Okay, let's next one. Mem. Lech me monokot samtu menem me'oid. Hashefa Chumash Yitzchak Ola Tmima Sheores Kenoshon Zorim Wasim Nasheni. The second type of gula is where we not only are individuals, but we're also we are also under attack, under siege from everyone around us. Avraham Avinu, we don't find, I mean, you find the Medrash that Nimrod was not happy with the direction his religious studies were taking and tried to have him go to the Kibshon Eish. But in the Psukim, you don't find that. Yitzchak, you find the first time an expression of hatred to him, jealousy, a hatred bred of jealousy, and they expressed those words, Leich mimon, get lost, ki atzanta menod, you become too big for us. And that's been one of the patterns of Golos, has been that they resent our success, they resent whatever it is that we have, and they come against us. So the second gula was a gula despite the hatred and resentment of the goyim around. Next, Nun, Hatzileini Nof. Sakana Vatsola Zea Shlava Shlishi Shezgal Zashkine Begoyim Kira. He said, Yaakov Avinu was Uba Oisamidam, skip down a line or two, Nisgal Zesel Kim Gamagol Shay Yaakov, who Omad Boided Bemavoko Hatmidi, Negat Kochos Ovum Bekarva Mishpacha. He was fighting against people in his own family, Al Shlom Kirushan Shabanov, who Omnam Kurvli Smaititus. Yaakov was pushed to the wall where he was about to be vanquished. He's alone against someone who's obviously stronger than him, a malach, who's pressing him to the wall, and he is close to collapsing. Even when he looks like he's close to collapse, he doesn't. And he comes out of it strengthened and a lot more than he had. So and he finishes so beautifully, so poetically. Umaklo, it says Yaakov said, "I crossed the yard with my makel, with my cane, my stick." A cane, a stick, is a sign of weakness. This a frail man goes with a cane. Umaklo, who a makel botzod yisrael ikras gulas noshkulit. It hobbles with that cane. They hobble to the geula of entire humanity. That's the third one. The fourth one is Pakod Pakadati. Doma hoya beini ha'am ku nishkach min alev. It looked to Klal Yisrael like HaKadosh Baruch Hu had forgotten from them. So v'hinei pakod nifka. So there's one thing when we're alone, when we have it tough, when we're being pressed against the wall, but being forgotten is much more devastating than all of them. If let's say you have a war, and you know that you're in a difficult position, and you're fighting, there's heavy fire against you, but you know that your own forces know where you are, and they're trying to get to you, and they have your mind, and that whatever it is, it gives you some courage. But if you feel that you were forgotten, nobody even realized they left over a platoon over here, over there, that's much more devastating. Klal Yisrael Mitzrayim was there 200 years forgotten. They forgot from Hashem, Hashem seemed to have forgotten them. Zashlav Revish Eskal Sashchinim told us Yaakov Yisrael. He says, L'benigu l'shlavim ha'koidmim, as opposed to the other times, Hoya ha'pam nituk muchot b'ram l'lkov. There was a total break. It seemed as if that covenant had dissolved. Kadosh Baruch Hu didn't seem to care for them. They didn't seem to care for Kadosh Baruch Hu. They were all over the Zohar. Kadosh Baruch Hu did nothing for them. Begolos Mitzrayim Nisha Kol Zechel Hashem Milvav Psurasa Shayot Seif Pokod Yifkod. Pokod Yifkod means, the word Pekida means remembering. Yosef said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu remembers. It's not forgotten. That was, his message was the message to counter the sense of being forgotten. On the surface, where? The nation kept sinking into slavery and poverty. The overseers were more and more cruel. And darkness enveloped them more and more. When they were holding ready by, and the Rambam writes it in his Kemat Kot Never ikazet. It was a hairbreadth away from losing it. Baka pitam argula, and the Kadosh Baruch pulled out Barmai Chayi. So pakod pakadati is a fourth level, which is even in when it appears because of the time that has passed, that a Kadosh Baruch Hu has left us, which is a lot more demoralizing, a lot more devastating than troubles. If you feel that you're being held on, then it's good. But if you feel abandoned, there's nothing. And finally, the fifth. It's Sam Tzadik. Tzemach Shmoye Metachta Yitzmach. Kates Kol HaKetzin Huzeh Kashe Yisrael Yirbe V'Yigdal Kamo Tzemach. It will happen when Klal Yisrael will flourish like a plant. Zeu HaKetz Asher Kol HaGeulois HaKoidmois Einan Alachanis HaKrasai. It is the Kates which all the other Geulos just led up to it. And it's going to be a Geul of a very different type. Lefesa Pitoim Gol Hashem Bezor Kodesh Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim was 1, 2, 3. At the right moment, HaKadosh Baruch Hu appeared. V'kach Likud Yisrael Guf Echad La'am. And that's how you forge a nation out of it, you know, by appearing as a Goel. And that's also how they changed it on a physical level. They were redeemed and so on and so forth. Let's skip over. He's next page, Rashi Test. Tachliso, second line. Tachliso shalom nitalo b'Torah. Our destiny is written in the Torah. Baksuvim kol advar she'eshem elav. Whatever Kadosh Baruch Hu spoke to us is written there. Ulam meirosh kav Hashem sheha'am yagi letachlis neskava zurak achrei shtalshan shanim. But this goal is written. But what's implied is it will take thousands of years to get there. The first stages of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's revealing himself were direct. Everything depended on our development. HaKadosh Baruch Hu planted a seed. And the question was, when would the seed develop? Torah was the seed that was planted. Thousands of years it will be needed until this seed will develop and embrace the entire physical and spiritual hekev of Klal Yisrael. So he says this is called tzemach, and we'll see in another minute. It's called tzemach because it's a very different type of geula. The other geulas were all sudden. HaKadosh Baruch Hu appeared to Avram, it says, after a long trek, he appeared to him. HaKadosh Baruch Hu fended off Yitzchak's enemies. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even when Yaakov was on the verge, was on the ropes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu pulled him out, and Mitzrayim, we were a long time there, but then HaKadosh Baruch Hu revealed himself. This is a very different type of geula. It's a process where a seed that was planted is growing and developing and so on. And now he says something very remarkable, and this is something that I would say is uniquely Rav Hirsch, and it's something that it takes. It's his vision. The thousands of years that we've been slowly growing and developing has a much greater effect than just us. He says, "Nitzchona haTorah." The Kerav Yisrael mehavim esteich tolos shal mechay b'apnimim. One, he says, it's what we're becoming, and then he says, mistava. That's four lines of bottom. Ki b'tkufa zu nisola mesila. In this tkufa of these thousands of years, because it's such a slow process, and we're everywhere, but tzad Yisrael likras hafatzes psura loikus bekavosh kudus. It is where Klal Yisrael is spreading the message of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the entire world. B'meshech alfei shana nischanech ha'om liyos mevaset tov v'nema shal dvar Hashem. For thousands of years, Klal Yisrael, in their own development, is becoming a messenger for dvar Hashem. U'beyodin v'lo yodin, whether we realize it or not, ha'y mefaze zare or al dvar shal dvar Hashem al pnei sodas ha'nushas. They were spreading out seeds of light, of Torah, on the fields of humanity. And as Klal Yisrael is getting ready to find its own destiny, they're making all of humanity ready for that. So that she will also observe those mitzvahs. Let's first see the passage. He says, Yisrael, when Klal Yisrael is amongst the nations, do you know what they're called in Tanakh? Nikra Yisrael. A Zion instead of a sin, meaning the plantings of God. V'shavarti eskesh Yisrael be'emek Yisrael. So he says over here, remarkable. The Rambam says this in the Rambam at the end of Hilchos Malachim. We didn't have this Rambam for a long time because it was censored out. And Baruch Hashem, the last Tkufis, we don't have censors, so we got back our Rambam. And the Rambam writes very, very powerful insight into our Tkufa. And also unusual because the Rambam in Halacha sticks to Halacha. And this is something that seems he must address. He's speaking about Mashiach and so on. And he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's understanding is beyond man's, and we can't understand all his ways and so on. But there's a sense to us that Christianity and Islam are the beginnings of a return of God to the world. In other words, and I think we need to understand idolatry. So for us, it's all in halacha. It's all the same. This idolatry, that idolatry, other idolatry. It's so what? Halachically, in some aspects, Christianity may or may not have a din of idol worship. It doesn't really. We don't. But we need to understand something. So long as men believed in idols, they believed in nothing. Because the question of the idol is not whether it's right or wrong. The question is, what does it stand for? It stands for nothing. Look at the Greek mythology. Their idols were a macro version of their own coarse selves, except they were bigger and stronger, so they could be more coarse and more vile. That was the only difference between the gods and men. The sense of the good, the right, the noble, the spiritual, all of those things are ideas that didn't exist in the world until Christ came around. The idea that there's a God in the sense that there is a measuring rod for the good and the bad. It's not the whim of a particular entity, but Tov and Ra have meanings and so on. That's an incredible change of man becoming divine-like, and we need to appreciate it. The fact that on a more specific level, both Christianity and Islam own up to Matan Torah. They may pervert and distort and everything you want. But and this is written that Barbanel writes something fascinating. Barbanel lived in the times of the Spanish Inquisition. He had no illusions about how pleasant it was to live under Christian rulers of his day. But he says, you know, being there means you can't forget your. Everyone tells you there's a God. There was Matan Torah. There's. They just felt whatever they their version, you know, has it changed. But there's certain key things that everyone subscribed to. He said, it came because of us. All of it. I once heard from Yaakov Weinberg, remarkable insight. It says that when the Torah was given, the whole world shook. So Yaakov Weinberg said, I didn't see it shake. No one seems to be doing. What change in the world? I mean, what, we're not talking about the physical shaking. That's not as important. What happened? I mean, what can you say has become universal, even to people that don't subscribe to it? So he said a fascinating insight. He said he was speaking about, I guess at that time, abortion of different types that was the controversy at the time. He said, before Torah was given, or before the sense of Torah was given, if somebody had a baby they didn't care for, they killed him, her, it, whatever it is. And you asked why? Because I don't like it. What do you mean why? It's like, why'd you give back the tchotchke or the suit or whatever? It's kind of like it. When Torah is given, we need to answer ourselves. We need to rationalize it. an unwanted child, it's not right for him or her to live. It's this, it's that, it's too many people in the world. Whatever it is, you need to rationalize it, because the sense that there's something wrong was brought into the world. It's far be it that anyone keeps it, but it's there as a reality that you need at least to answer it. So he says, even Jews who, when they were in Eretz Yisrael, were not observant and they were far from it. Tumnu bechuba masazerazer. Deep inside, they had that seed. They carried it far away. They were mashpia on people, and it gave birth to ideas that have a kesher to Ruach HaTorah. Ein sofik, shafilu atarbus hamufasa demisyonerim anoitzrim, befinu that the religion that's disseminated by Christian missionaries at the end of the world, mushpas ha'shol, is an influence of Torah. Im yesh garin shol emes b'tarbusam, if there's one grain of truth in their culture, hare ein zeh munasam hazara, it's not the stuff that they added. Kim harayoyna shalokho mimini gesom ruach HaTorah. It's what they got from Torah and so on. Avos azulas, love of the other. Regesh achrayis klapatach atzmam, a sense of obligation, duty. Emes v'yosha, truth, integrity. Nesias naim shemaima, devotion to Hashem Baruch Hu. Elohem tzoyim shahodus naim atzirim tamalusam. The reason why they're successful is because the core of the core of the message is true. They've tried to dress it up and give it a different flavor and try to make a product that it wasn't meant to make. But at the end of the day, if it speaks to somebody, it's because of that. Emunoso mehave efo, their belief is rakli aroi, a temporary vehicle, lahaknoyas rayonos hakrov ruach HaTorah, to bring to the world ideas that are close to Torah. Ve'ulam, he says, because they don't carry it out on a practical level, it doesn't last so much and it waxes and wanes. So now he goes back to his point of Tzemach, and he says, Tzemach, this is our golus, the golus that sprouts. Hatzomeach nimtza bispatlus masmedes. Something that grows is constantly growing. And this is an animal, we see it running. So we have no doubts that it's running. But a plant just stands there, and yet it is growing every second. The concept of the plant growing is testimony to processes that happen in the Bria, slowly but constant. Tzemach, the Mashiach of Tzemach, Zeo Yehudi v'Tor Yochid, it is the Jew as an individual, Asher Yehave Siyais Patrus and Ruach Hashem, that will bring about the fullness of human development in light of Hashem's spirit. Adi Pulosa Mashpia Shavasayim, by his actions that have an effect. And he brings here a lot of psukim that compare Klal Yisrael to different plants. I could go through them. All of them beautiful psukim that compare Klal Yisrael to a vineyard that's growing, to and so on and so forth. Last paragraph on this page. Hagu'ula shana mitzapim lo, lotia pis'omis pinas pagrati, poetias mitzrayim. The gula we're waiting for is not the sudden emergence of Hashem like Bar Mitzrayim. Kash Hashem akol yochol tofis pita malach historia, u'mishanes halich magashin echnes. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu sort of grabs the rudder of history and makes a radical change. Hagu'ula ha'asido tovo kedei tzmicha v'esfashlus. The gula ha'asido is going to come through growth and maturity. Arucha v'kol v'shamar kikol yishu chefzi, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hashkacha is focused on this geula which grows and develops and matures day to day. So he says, take a look at something remarkable. It says, Shnei alafim yomos Mashiach. The Gemara says, it doesn't say 2,000 years we're in Golos. It says 2,000 years is the era of Mashiach. In other words, what's happening constantly is Mashiach. Eilat dvarim asisar azaftim. Im kol zayis, he says, yitochen shenushis tufta beidoma lekebal gul pesach. Humanity might be very surprised. They'll be shocked. And he brings the famous parasha in Yeshaya, because they weren't aware of this constant growth. Shekein ha'enushos mechapeses es yisho b'mokoyim shomim ha'verosei satomid. Mankind keeps looking for the Yeshua somewhere. He sha'efes rak liris es ha'gadlos ha'gashmus. Humanity looks at big things, and there's nothing big, no big impressive gulas here. Ve'enu roya es hazera ha'tsanua sha'ruchnis. They don't see that quiet seed of ruchnis. It's something on a very, very mini scale. I guess in my lifespan, when I was growing up, orthodoxy was, people with Shem Torah mitzvahs were on the wane, and the reform and conservative were building these magnificent temples, and they would, and someone would walk by, and we had basic shtibles. Nothing, nothing impressive, just these rundown little things. And somebody would say, well, I mean, take a look. I mean, what is there to compare? And if you're asking, where's the future? And the answer is, because, yes, when you look at the shell on the outside, of course, this is a big shell, this is nothing. But what's growing inside? Is there something taking root? Is there something that has is there something that has a life force to it that's growing and flourishing? The same way, if we do what's right, we put these seeds into the ground and they grow. Yes, when you watch, what's the saying, a watched plant doesn't grow, a watched flower, that's true, because you can't see it that way. But if you give it what it needs to grow, it will grow. And he brings all this psukim in that, and then he concludes with something very fascinating. And let's look at the very last piece of his. Let's look at an Aresh Chaf Beis at the end of it. He brings here the menorah in the Haftorah. He explains it very beautifully. The Avdi Tzemach and the menorah. He says a menorah looks like a tree. The way a menorah is, it has a base that holds it down. It has a centerpiece and it has branches. The Kanei menorah, it's very, very similar to a tree. And he explains it very beautifully over here. Let's look at the last piece here. Im asimen shal tzadik, tzemach shmoi umetachtav yitzmach, maschila golas ruchov. With that phrase, with that pasuk, tzemach, starts this long golas. Asher bo kolam yidaseinu rak b'zchus emuna, shanem maminim b'gdeiloso utzmichos hamechaz hashmayim. The emuna that keeps us going is not the emuna that at some point there'll be a geula. It's the emuna that things take root and slowly create the infrastructure to become a big plants. We see all sorts of nations that were grand, sink. V'rak Yisrael sheme al oimetz ruchu eskibs kei masei, lam shabia seis uv mishem meretz b'milushtiv saniskav. Let's look at the final paragraph, next page. Zuyei chacha chayteches, ki kiyuma v'nitzchiyusa shal ruach ha-teire k'shurim v'oif ha-tzmich shan seho. The existence and survival of the ruach ha-teire depends on the type of growth of those who carry it. And now it says, ha-guf ha-chai oli shachas karef ayin. A living body can get destroyed. Anything, an animal has a complex body, and there are bits and pieces of it that, if that goes, the whole thing goes. There's something called, I didn't check it, if my memory serves me right, and if there's anybody here who's in the field, I think it's called totipotent, if I'm not mistaken. It's in animal cells, they are differentiated, and once they're differentiated into specific organs or functions, they theoretically contain the full complement of genes, but they're not going to grow into anything else. And you know, once you get past a stem cell and something becomes whatever it is, it can't. A vegetable, a plant, any part of it, given the right circumstances, will grow into the whole plant. You can plant any part of the carrot, and there are differences in how well they take and so on, but the cells, each cell of a plant has the ability to become the entire plant. I believe it's called totipotency. I will, if anybody here knows the exact, I'm pretty sure that's the term. That's unique about some growing. So he says every single person, Kol Yisrael, has the ability to become the tzemach. Haguf achai, something that's living, can become destroyed. Loikein atzemach, kol chalakik mimenu meichel es kochayim shakulay. Every element of a plant has the life force of the entirety. Kol nima sheboy, asur es pateach mechodesh letzemach shalay. The tiniest hair of a plant can grow into a plant. Beroseinu ilon shesmotet besaro nifke bebarat. If we see a big tree that collapsed in a storm, kishanofim dudolin, and the branches are broken, v'kol alav bezos bazos oviv, and all the leaves and fruits are spread all over, doma benin shaketzon kitz. So we think, wow, it's gone. V'ulam osid gizas mecholish. Its trunk will resprout again. Asher yotzitz prochem peske goydmoi. Oyse goyrim. And Adrabi says, you know, if you take that tree and you smash it up and throw stuff out, you end up a lot of times having more growing. Who even if disease is ruining it, bits and pieces of that tree will regrow again. So I guess if we can just recap, he's looking at Hanukkah in the light of all the geulas of Klal Yisrael. The fact that Hanukkah is the last nes means not only is it the last marker that we have to hold on to because it's so precious, it's the last marker of geula, it also is the marker that needs to serve us till the end of times. That's the last poll that we can and look back at, and we need to understand it. And we need to understand it in terms of this gula of tzemach, that it's something which, it's a gula that, the gula takes 2,000 years. It's a gula that is development. The fact that it's development means that it develops as a plant would develop, means that it's very frustrating, because we don't see things, we don't, no, I once read a beautiful anecdote about Reb Matcha Gifter. Reb Matcha Gifter was a Shiva of Tells. He was an extraordinarily, he was extraordinary Talmud Chacham, very, very poetic, a person, master speaker. They had a yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael for about 2 years. Tells had a branch. And then because the other Rashiva passed away, he had to go back to America. But he was there for 2 years, and he was very, he was on a high for the 2 years he was there. And one, at the end of the winter, he was walking, and Telstone was sort of kind of mountainous and there weren't many houses around. So he was strolling through the road and watching everything around. And he started crying. And Reb Moshe Scheinemann was the one who writes the story. Yevon HaChaim was walking with him, the Talmud of his. And why is Rashi crying? So he points to a little red flower. It's called a kalanit in Israel. That's like the first flower that begins to grow right before the spring when everything grows. He says, you know, in 2 weeks from now, the entire mountain is going to be covered with green. And this little red flower is the harbinger of it. It's the herald. It's telling me, it's the mevasa of the psura. He says, I know that very soon it'll be green again, but I'm waiting for that red flower. You know, and he meant it, Klal Yisrael, and so on. You know, and he said, and I don't see the red flower. That's why I'm so upset. and understanding that it's a long haul and it's an ongoing process, but it's also chizuk. Nothing that we do right goes to waste. Just like a plant, every seed and when you're in chinuch, one of the things that you, when you look back, is you're sometimes amazed at how sometimes a small thing that you did or said has great implications. Sometimes, unfortunately, negative, and you eat yourself up that you said wrong thing, wrong time, wrong person, and that's unfortunately that's part of what you know. There's a din v'cheshbon. But sometimes a person will tell you, you said something to me 20 years ago, and that made a change in my life. And it means everything. Nothing goes to waste. Everything has a power to grow and to sprout and to give up payers. It also has an extraordinary vision over here that if we do what's right, then the world will learn from us and the world will pick it up. They may attack us. They may come against us. They may everything. At the end of the day, whatever good is and will be in the world are seeds that we sow. And primarily, it's what we do and how we act. It's something that is going to... I guess we'll finish off with a story that I once heard, and it's a story that was extraordinary. It's on a CD that I think Agudah must have put it out. It's a story of the Mir Yeshiva in Shanghai, and the story is mostly given by people they interviewed who had been there. So as authentic as you can get, you know, it's a DVD. It's you see the people also, and I know one or two of the people. They made it before, I mean, just in time so that these people could talk about it. And one of the people, his name was Zupnik, described the most crucial piece, one of the most crucial pieces was getting visas to go through Russia, through Japan, to what they thought would be Carasso. It didn't end up being that, but that was a very critical piece. There was a Japanese consul at the time in Lithuania, which in itself is fascinating. Why it was like that, but he was there, and Rav Zupnik came to him to get him to give them visas. And the Japanese consul asked him why, and he told him to save us. He said I had 10,000 different things running through my head, and Hashem put the right words. He said, okay. But I'm leaving in 48 hours. And the Japanese visas had to be hand-painted. There was no typing machine, there was nothing. He had to hand-paint it. So he said, if you show me how to hand-paint it, I'll also do it. There was a Nazi officer who was the secretary of that Japanese consulate. The Nazis had given it to the consul as a quote-unquote gesture of goodwill, you know, because the Japanese were allies. And the real reason was because they didn't trust each other, and they wanted to have a Gestapo officer taking care and knowing what's going on. So he chimed in and he said, I'll also help. He said it was the most surreal scene. For 48 hours, a Japanese consul, a yeshiva bacha, and a Gestapo officer sat and painted these visas. When they got the list, I don't remember how many, he says how many, incredible amount. He said when they finished, the consul got up, you know, basically he was closing the consul down. The Gestapo officer got up, and he turned to Zupnik and he said, I knew one of your type once. I guess he meant the religious Jew. And I really thought a lot of him, and that's why I did it. And he left. Now, this person... whoever was this Jew that made an impression on a German who had become a Gestapo officer, and now in Shemayim, he can't figure out, he saved him in yeshiva. So here's a person who acted with integrity, kindly. I don't think that the Gestapo officer knew if he was wearing Rabbeinu Tam tefillin or Rashi tefillin. So it was some sort of act of whatever it is that shone out, and it planted a seed in the hardest rock in the world. The Gestapo officers, he's telling me, why should I said over? I heard him say, and so someone did something, and look what it accomplished. nothing good. The site of our Geul is, it's maddeningly slow. It's very, very difficult to see that red flower, and that's why it's so discouraging. But the emunah is not that there someday will be Mashiach. The emunah is that anything good we do, every seed we grow, every drop of water we give to the seeds, that's part of that semach that's going to grow.